Good morning. Today is the last day of June. Jeez Louise. 30th of June. Joining us this morning from the California Highway Patrol, the big dude is with us, Mr. Sean Morris. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what, short straw? Everybody run out of town? Left you alone? What happened here?
Alone. They left me alone. There's no one to watch me today.
So. Yeah, all right. So you just kind of wander around.
I'm just kind of wandering around.
That's pretty cool. All right. You ready for our Why Do We Say It?
Yes.
All right. And you don't even have somebody you can shunt it off on.
I know, right? Yeah.
You're running. Okay. This is a food? You okay food. With food?
Yeah. All right. Let's do food.
Chicken a la king.
Chicken a la king. Okay. Chicken a la king. Well, I would imagine it has something to do with maybe some monarch. I don't know. I'll just go with that.
All right.
I'm sure you're going to tell me.
Yeah. Well, the other one was cook one's goose. So I thought that might be a little bit nicer for you. Regardless of whether or not you have a taste for chicken a la king, listing of it seems to have a touch of class to a menu. That is appropriate since it seems to have first been prepared in a world-famous hotel. For generations, Carriages of London had been favored by both natives and tourists who could afford it. Several times, a notable event has inspired a chef to concoct a brand new dish. This was the case in 1881 when a horse owned by J.R. Keene won the Grand Prix. To celebrate the victory, the kitchen crew came up with Chicken a la Keene, a name just sufficiently French to imply elegance. By the time the new dish spread from Carriages into the general use, few remember the temporary fame of a racetrack winner, but nearly everybody who borrowed or adopted the hotel recipe agreed that this kind of chicken was good enough for royalty. Transformed in speech from chicken a la king to chicken a la king, it is now a worldwide and used a century after it was created.
Oh, wow. Pretty cool.
Yeah. Another opportunity for us to mutate the language. Yes! Oh, boy. So end of your fiscal year.
End of the fiscal year, yes.
What does that mean?
That means all of our requisitions and everything have to be in. So we had to do all of that. It's interesting. Winston was just talking about you guys replaced your server. And so we actually just did the same thing. And so we had to, scramble to get all of that stuff done. But, yeah, there's the business side of, of what we do. And so, yeah, I think we got our emails a while back that we had to make sure that all of our requisitions were in and stuff.
Get your act together.
Get everything together.
Now, do you have to do budgets, or are you given a figure and said, okay, personnel is off your list, this is off your list, and here's your discretionary 10%?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, yeah, as the department gets its annual budget, then, obviously that gets divvied down, and then each of the commanders, division commanders, and then the area commanders are allotted, so much money to, operate and do what they have to do. So there are certain things that we have to make sure that we spend appropriately, so we have to be good stewards of the budget that we're given. So, yeah.
Well, you're toeing the line.
Absolutely, man. Absolutely.
So the area commander position, is it an operational position, or is it the top enforcement guy?
So it's both.
Position.
Yeah, so it's both. It's another good question. So yes, as the area commander for the Highway Patrol, then I'm considered the head law enforcement officer here in this region. But in addition to that, I have an operation. I have a facility. I have staff. I have vehicles. I have all of these things. So there is a fair amount of operational things that I have to do, make sure that, budgets are maintained and, so yeah, I had to balance the books.
So you have to, you don't have like an office manager?
Well, I do have an office manager, but that's, primarily clerical functions, clerical staff. And so there is a good majority of things. So as, as our budgets and things come in, then I work with my office manager to ensure that, our reporting is accurate and, we have to send all of that up to our headquarters, which is over in Redding and then over down in Sacramento. So yes.
With that kind of a structure, would most people recognize the office as a business or as a military?
So it is a business, and we are considered paramilitary. So
that would be the gun part.
That's the portion of So the training at the academy and all that stuff. There are two distinct, so to speak, parts of what we do, and that would be with any law enforcement agency. So you would have the paramilitary side is what you see on a regular basis, the black and white patrol cars, the officers in uniform and all of those things. But then the other side of it is, our professional staff, where, we have to balance the budget and, do all of those
things. Keep the lights on.
Sign off on all the requisitions and the purchase orders that come in. So
with the staff time you have, and I don't know how many hours a week, but I'm sure you do, that are inside the office, how much is report processing and generating and tracking and all the regulatory types of things that, they're related, but other than an active case that the district attorney or the AG is looking for documentation, it just kind of disappears somewhere in a binder or an ether, and it's looked at down the road.
It is inextricably linked. I mean, there is any time that an officer goes out and does their job, they make contact with the public, we're writing a report. We have to document it in some fashion. Either we're going to write down that we made contact with someone if it's just a traffic stop, right?
So A nice guy traffic stop.
Well, I'm sure you're going to ask me about that.
Nah.
You're probably going to volunteer. But yes, traffic stops. So those are all documented. And then, of course, if there is a situation where an officer takes someone into custody, then a report is generated. Well, all of that goes back to the office, and then those things have to be processed. So we have to get those reports to the district attorney's office. There are reports that there's Public Records Act requests that come in, and so we have to generate or make copies.
Is there a lot of that stuff for CHP?
Yeah. Almost on a daily basis, yeah.
Really? Even up here?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
From who?
Whoever, the public.
Just citizens?
The general,
typically?
Anyone has the right, to ask for
anything. Well, you got the right to do a whole bunch of things, but I'm not going to.
The business of, a state entity, a state agency, is that, the public has a right to know what we do. So if they make a request to know, hey, what do you guys do in this, then we're obligated by law to provide that information. So
it's 8:19.
Hi there, and good evening, and welcome to the Jim Bohannon Show from Westwood One Radio. We're at 1-866-50-JIMBO, 1-866-505-4626. Weekdays at 7 p.m., it's the Jim Bohannon Show. I'm Jim Bohannon. Join me here on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Times, 8:24. We're back talking shop this morning with Sean Morse from California Highway Patrol. 4-day weekends, 3-day weekends, depending on how you want to look at this thing and who sets the schedules.
Yeah. as you give me the mean eye.
Well, and we've got different activities going on, everything like that. I'm sure you're going to be throwing everybody that you can out on the roads.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely.
What is the number one concern that you have for an elongated weekend? Is it the drunk driver? Is it the tourist that gets lost? Speeding? What is it that is kind of like the number one let's focus on and pay attention to avoid this scenario?
So it's actually all of those things. So for the maximum enforcement periods is what you're referring to. For the 4th of July weekend, it's all of those things. So we look for the impaired driver. We look for folks that are out there. This is the one of the few times in the year that they decide that they're going to go visit family. And so maybe they don't drive as regularly long distances, and maybe they hadn't checked their car in a while, but they get out there and drive, and you know, their tires might be a little bald, you know, or, you know, they may not have had a, you know, maintenance done for their vehicle, and then it breaks down. So our officers are out there looking for disabled motorists.
They're be assist looking, almost.
Yeah, right, to help them out, right, to get them to where they're going safely. We look for impaired drivers. We look for those primary collision factors that cause, you know, the mileage death rate to go up. So speeding, tailgating,
Humboldt County lane
changes. Well, you know, you laugh, and it seems to be that is in a lot of jurisdictions across, you know, highway.
There are certain areas you're right, just going
right,
to get
right,
more.
Same. It happens everywhere. So what we ask is for folks to pay attention when you're driving. Distracted driving is another really, really big one. And so we tell folks, hey, if you're going to be out there driving, just period, right? But especially for this weekend, make sure that you get your vehicle serviced and checked. Make sure that you have appropriate air in the tires and that, you know, you've had, you know, your vehicle maintenance done. Watch what you're doing. Stay off of your cell phone. It's not important, you know, while you're driving, right? If you need to make an emergency phone call, get off the freeway, go to a safe location, make a phone call, do what you have to do. But, you know, you have to be paying attention when you're behind the wheel of that car.
Well, particularly in our area, there's so many areas where there's no cell phone coverage.
Be cognizant focus of what you're doing. If you're, you know, changing the dial on the radio, you know,
you don't change the dial.
I'm sorry, Brian, you're right,
you are now in trouble, buddy.
You're right, I'm sorry. keep the radio safe.
Yeah, we ripped the knobs right off. You mentioned impaired drivers, Sean, and it was something when legalization happened. I can remember talking to folks ad nauseum. What if 0.08 is booze? What is it for pot? Oh, well, we haven't determined. It hasn't been any. Well, okay, it's kind of like obscenity, right? Or was it
insanity?
No.
Obscenity.
Pornography. I don't know how to describe it, but I know it when I see it. Right? That was out of the Supremes.
Got it.
Okay. Same with somebody loaded. Oh, I don't know what it is, but I know it when I see it. Well,
right.
You know, that's kind of a nebulous reference, and to say, well, it appeared as if.
Right.
I don't know. Have they come down with anything that gives you guys and gals the tools to say you're over the line?
Yeah, right, yes. So our officers are trained. We have our drug recognition experts. We have folks that are trained in the detection of the usage of drugs while they're, you know, driving or under the influence or impaired by those types of substances or they're driving. So our folks receive, you know, hours and hours upon hours of training. What it boils down to is that if an officer conducts a DUI evaluation and they determine that person to be under the influence, right? There's a general section for being under the influence, and then procedurally, then they will, you know, do the have the person do the chemical test and all those things. And
touch your nose, walk the line.
Right. So if they determine that it's not alcohol, but it is of, you know, a drug substance,
something, yeah,
right, then there's a procedure for that. And then that's determined, that'll be worked out in the courts. But for the officer to determine if there's impairment, they go through the series of, you know, the evaluation, DUI evaluation for that. So
there have been advocates back when legalization hadn't happened that said, well, prescription abuse is worse than pot. More prevalent than, impacts you more than, et cetera, et cetera,
so
et cetera.
So the adjectives, right? More.
Yeah, yeah. So when you, there's something goofy. Your fella or gal pulls them over. Okay. It's not booze. You can tell something's a little goofy. What kind of ratio is there between pot or meth or any of the other things and prescription drugs? Is prescription drug abuse significant enough?
Yes. So you have to think, right? There's folks out there that are prescribed medications, right? You know, for, you know, a host of ailments or what have you by their doctor, right? Those are it's legal, right? You get prescribed those things, but you have to be. There are a lot of warnings, right, about taking those things and then operating heavy machinery or operating a motor vehicle. And so there's all types of things out there. So our officers encounter all of those things. So it's not just alcohol. It's not just your, methamphetamines or, you know, other types of what you would consider traditional drugs, but it's prescribed medications as well.
Too many smart comments. KINS, News and Information, Diamond City.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:36. We're back talking shop this morning with Sean Morris from the CHP. A lot of different events are going on, not only here, but throughout the state over the, as part of the 4th of July. Do you guys see any change in the driving patterns after these events when people get on the road, frustration from waiting, it takes me an hour and a half to get out of the parking lot? Okay, now I'm free. I got to make up the time. Goofy driving, you know, the weaving in and out stuff. Is there a higher incidence of that following festivals, following events, following large public gatherings?
I would say so. I think what you mentioned is correct. I think there's frustration levels can run pretty high. When folks are bogged down in traffic and you have folks that are leaving events and then you have other folks that may not have been a part of that event that get stuck in that, you know, sort of thing.
Like reggae, waiting on both ends, waiting to be able to get through the choke.
So I think there's a fair amount of that. I mean, and on a much larger scale, I'll tell you, so as we sort of reintegrated back from the working at home from the COVID thing, as you know, people started going back to work, we saw greatly increased speeds. greatly increased speeds because folks were like, "Hey, there's nobody out here on the freeway," and so they're just you know flying down the
autobahn,
down the highway. Oh yeah, it was like, you know, gentlemen, start your engines, and you know, you're gone. So we had to get out there, and which what we always do, but to monitor the traffic and slow folks down. It's dangerous.
Is it easier for you visually to spot someone driving beyond the either the speed limit or the zone of speed limit when there's more traffic or less traffic?
Oh, so I love that question. That takes me back to the days when I was on patrol, and we're all, you know, really good at that, right? Like, you don't...
Well, that's your expertise,
Well, yeah, it's our expertise. When you see the black and white highway patrol car, it's too late because they've already got you. They already got you. They're way back. You can't even see them. So, yeah, we're really good at detection of speeders and different things like that. So, and, you know...
But is that through eyesight or is that the radar or the LIDAR?
A combination of, right? So the radar, LIDAR. LIDAR is actually way more accurate, than radar. But yeah, so we have that technology that we use. And then obviously the eye of the officer, right? And so, you know, we can see, you know, cars will stand out as they start. Well, and I'll just let people know, right? You know, making tons of lane changes and, you know, speeding and all those things that draws the attention of the officer. They see that. And then we'll be back, way back watching, and then we'll initiate a
see somebody
pace.
Doing the zip thing. Yeah. It's kind of, I don't know why, right? I'm sure you've had enough interviews to find out the why part of it. But like, we were down in the Bay Area, was that 2 weeks ago? I guess it was last week, maybe. Mm-hmm. Five lanes each way. Yeah, you know, you get some of these little short little cars. Zero, 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 zero. You know, not the Lamborghinis. You know, those guys, they have to do that. That's, I think, part of the purchase agreement. They have to be able to. But these little, you know, buzzing around and going from the slow lane to the fast lane, and it's like it must be a game. There's no logical reason to do that.
It's all over the map. I mean, you have folks that do engage in street racing, which is not, I mean, none of that's super dangerous. You have folks that are
They're racing in the middle of regular traffic.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Then you have folks that are late to work, late to an appointment. You have folks that are agitated because
of the
traffic.
But this is a different driving skill set, though. If I'm late for work, I'm not going to start cutting guys off by 15 feet at 60 miles or 80 miles an hour trying to go back and forth.
Yeah, they will.
Really?
On my way here, I pulled someone over. They were late for work and, going through the corridor. 80?
Weaving?
Not that fast, but weaving in and out because they're late for work. So it happens. It happens. So, all different types of
is there a profile?
Poor driving behavior.
Does it tend to be the youngers?
No, it's all over the map. So it doesn't matter. It's poor driving behavior that, part of our job, obviously, is to enforce the law, but is to also educate, right? To bring that attention to folks, to let them know, what the issues are,
somebody doing that.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't know what they're doing and doesn't understand the safety risk they're putting everybody at.
Oh, come on, Brian.
They can't go brain dead that bad, can they? I thought it was only going 85, not 90.
I like to give people the benefit of the doubt. I like to give people the benefit of the doubt.
Look for the guy with the big badge on his car if you're going to go speeding through Humboldt County, right? Oh, I suppose some of the excuses have been rather unique also.
Oh, yeah. I've heard all types of...
And the pregnancy one, getting ready for birth. Okay, fine. I'll escort you.
Oh, yeah.
You know what?
That, yeah.
But you ought to go into the maternity ward.
Oh, yeah.
When we get there. Because if you don't, we got another meeting. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bleeding, ER thing.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that makes sense, too, where you guys would escort them. But is there any other legit reason other than just hot-dogging?
Well, I mean, so it's, obviously the discretion of the officer. And I'll tell you, this is probably a more somber, more serious one, but this was a long time ago, as a young man, driving like just really, really fast, weaving in and out of traffic. I mean, almost 100 miles an hour, everything. Pulled him over, and he was saying that he was the only person in his family that was, I guess everyone was on vacation or whatever. His grandfather was literally in the hospital and was final moments.
Final stages,
right?
Yeah.
So I said, I'll follow you to the hospital. I wanted to give him the benefit of the doubt. I said, but you got to obey the traffic laws and we'll get you there. So, obviously, if he was, telling a...
Blowing smoke,
then yeah. He was going to get a citation. Yeah. But we did. We weren't too far from the hospital that he was headed to. We get there. He parked his car. And as he walked in, he was immediately greeted by the ER doctor, was able to get in and spend the last moments with his grandfather.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. So that was, and obviously that's I did not give him a citation. Right. Yeah. I just, I just say, hey, make sure
you... That would have been poor taste.
No, poor taste. Right. So I did. But, the cool thing is that, when you interact with the public and they tell you those things, is like you get an opportunity to say, yeah, I believe you. You just make sure we do that. But you get in. Do what you got to do with your family, and you get to spend your last moments there. And so that made me feel good that he was able to do that. I wouldn't have been able to sleep if I knew that was the case, and then I prevented that from happening. That would have been horrible. So, but that was a really good thing, and that's a cool thing that we get to do, is to help someone out. And so I'm sure he will never forget that. And nor would I. I mean, it was like 20 years ago. So.
KINS, hopefully his other grandpa wasn't in the same spot.
No.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 8:44.
Hi, folks. Fly Humboldt wants to remind you that flying local is buying local. And with airlines going to seven cities serving hundreds of destinations, it's easier than ever to get to where you want to go from Humboldt County's airport. That's right, you can fly on American, Avelo, and United Airlines nonstop to Denver, Hollywood, Burbank, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. Flying has never been more convenient or affordable, so book your trip now. For more information, go to flyhumboldt.org.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:48. We're back talking shop this morning with Sean Morris from the California Highway Patrol. Sean, how different is Humboldt County? I mean, you've been around now long enough. You're starting to get that green cast about you. than the Bay Area or the Valley. We hear about that, mm-hmm. certainly with a lot of the folks relocating here.
Mm-hmm.
We hear some really interesting things. Mm-hmm. More confirmation we're in the right place here.
Yeah.
Rather than being in some of the other areas. Do you see a difference in the people?
No. So when we talk about driving behaviors, and it's all the same. I think the distinct differences, right? There's not a lot of vehicular traffic up here as compared to, like you said, the Bay Area or the Valley or anything like that. However, I will say that the incidents are a bit more sensational, if you will. So if there's a traffic accident up here, I mean, we have a lot of two-lane highways, and so if there's a traffic accident here, a lot of times it's a bit more severe than in your large metropolitan areas where you might have, a lot of, what we call property damage only collisions or
like
something like that.
Merging into somebody.
Oh, yeah. So like a fender bender, there. Or even at freeway speeds, you might have, some property damage, maybe some minor injuries. But here, a lot of times, the injuries are pretty significant.
A lot more head-on.
Head-on collisions, yeah. Folks going off the roadway for not paying attention, and so going down, some embankments and different things like that. So some of those collisions are a bit more gnarly, comparative to the Bay Area. So
does that the training then have to do with the folks, or is everybody in the Valley, even though there is no thing called a cliff?
Yeah.
They're able to handle those scenarios.
Same training, just the recurrence of some of those things are just different, right? So they just have to deal with slightly different things, but the training is all the same. They approach a situation the same as they would in the Bay Area. They have to protect the scene. They have to make sure that they're, ensuring that the lanes are appropriately, closed off, and making sure that they position their patrol vehicles in a fashion where it's high visibility to warn oncoming motorists and different things like that, and then to take the necessary precautions to protect folks that are at the scene or get them, medical aid and different things like that. So it's all typically the same.
So we don't have more attitude or less attitude here.
No, the attitude is kind of the same all the way around. You have upset folks, people are just going to be upset, right?
Yeah.
So, happens all the time.
Yeah. So with a 3-day weekend like we've got coming up, is there just more traffic that's going on? Are people driving more? Because there seems to be two bodies. One is chance to get out and go.
Yep.
And the other is, I'm staying at home. Two different dynamics.
Definitely a lot more.
Do we
driving.
Tend to have more people on the road?
Oh, yeah.
Coming here.
Oh yeah. More people on the road. So you have a lot of folks that are be traveling, right? They're going to go visit family members, or they're going to say, hey, we're going to do a camping trip, right? Or something like that. Folks that are, because you said it's a 3-day weekend, right? So folks are going to be getting off work early.
A 3-day.
Some of us,
it might be a little bit more.
Well, we're always working, so.
You got to play that card,
right.
Huh?
Oh, okay. Where's your little violin? I think you have the little violin and playing. There's definitely the vehicular traffic. It tends to be greater, during the holiday weekends, long holiday weekends, as opposed to regular.
So I would suspect if you're sticking around, just go a little bit slower.
Very cognizant of your surroundings, right? Yeah. Obey the traffic laws. Be very aware of what you're doing. Yeah.
Kind of the norm, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, okay.
The
preached norm. Yeah.
Should be the norm.
Oh, well, I would say fourth and third and second.
Exactly.
Okay, fine. Yes. See everybody tomorrow.